Hands on the game.
You're listening to KBOO Community Radio, and this is Winner's Bias, America's first, best, and only board game radio show.
Until proven otherwise.
A show about board games and talking to strangers. I'm your host, Nate, and with me is my buddy, James. How are you doing?
I'm doing good today, Nate. Nate, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right. You can comment on our show live using the OLARC messaging system on kboo.org. Before we get started, KBOO's in the middle of our end-of-year Catalog of Connections fund drive. We're looking to raise $75,000 by the end of the year. KBOO's shows offer a variety of subjects, a catalog, if you will, from politics to environmental issues to music, arts, Spanish-only programming, and even a show about board games, of all things. If you would like to donate, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. It's not just supporting this show or the shows you regularly listen to, but the KBOO volunteer programmers, that's all of us, who have something to share. Thanks for your support. And with us today are Ben Olgart, General Manager of Guardian Games, and Sam DeRoast, their board game buyer. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Great to be here.
Yeah, appreciate you waiting so long to talk into the mics.
Yeah, I was chomping at the bit. I'm ready to go.
So I guess the first question, we kind of usually have some universal questions. How long have you been in the hobby, and how did you get into it? Sam, why don't you start?
Yeah, I mean, I grew up playing games with my family, played a lot of Balderdash, but my family has a yearly game of Acquire, which is an old Sid Sackson game from the 60s. Most families were playing Monopoly, but for whatever reason, my family, we play this yearly game of Acquire, still going strong. But I got into proper, like, you'd consider them hobby board games in 2017, when a friend came over with the game Dominion. Up until that point, I'd been playing a lot of, like, werewolf and, like, hidden roll kind of games. Those are usually my jam. But, yeah, when I was introduced to Dominion, that kind of blew my mind. And I played, like, basically only that game for a year and a half. And after that, I got a job doing a board game after school program for kids, and I was exposed to a lot of games that way. And then I just kind of was like, this is where I'm supposed to be, and just dove in head first.
How about you, Ben?
I came to games in general. Similar to Sam, I played them with my family growing up, but a local comic book shop had a new card game in 1994 that I was able to check out. That card game was Magic. Got hooked on that for about 10 years. Got introduced to Carcassonne and sort of like, I think it was 2003, but bounced off of it a little bit since I was such a Magic player. Mm. But after I put Magic down sort of later on, I think similarly in 2012, I came across Dominion as well. Mm. And that was the game that said, this is it. This is what I want to be doing.
That's interesting. Carcassonne, I find to be one of the most stressful games imaginable because you have no control over the tile flipping. And I'm just like, I just need the thing. And then it doesn't come. And I'm just like, oh, no. So stressful.
I mean, that's the best kind of game for me where it's just all random. It sounds like, anyway, I haven't played it. But we just got to flip and just hope for the best.
Yeah. Do with what you got. Yeah, you know, you got this tile. What's the best thing you can do?
I've never played this game, but that's good because then... Yeah. It doesn't matter. I don't have to strategize.
Right.
It's a great intro game for families, for sure.
So how did you find your gaming groups once you grew beyond your families?
That's tough. I feel like I did the thing you're not supposed to do, where I tried to turn all of my friends into my game group. I tried to convert them all. And that worked, honestly. I was able to... do that for a while, and then I moved from Brooklyn to Portland, and now because I work at Guardian Games and have made a lot of gaming connections, now I've found people that already have that pre-built love of games, and I don't have to do as much coaxing. So
what I'm hearing is definitely force your friends to play games.
Yeah, I mean, it's what's good for them, but sometimes you also have to be like, okay, well, you know, it's not for everyone.
You
know?
But you will make it. So it's for everyone.
Yeah.
Drag them in.
Yeah.
There was a, for me, there was a meetup in Portland, I think in 2013, 2014, at my father's place, the dive bar down the street. It was called Dice and Drinks, and it routinely had anywhere from 80 to 100 people showing up There was a host there who would sort of pair you with other people. You could grab games from their catalog. And after going there for, you know, a couple weeks to a year, I found myself playing with the same people over and over again. And that became our group. And we realized, like, hey, you know, we could just be playing at our house rather than coming to the bar every Wednesday.
So, yeah. So you guys were into board games before you started working at the board game store. I always like to ask this question. Has working amongst board games ever made you feel tired of board games? You're just like, oh, another one? Like, you get home or your friend's like, hey, I want to play this board game. And you're just like, I've just been around board games the whole day talking about them. Can we just not?
No. For my bachelor party, like, we got a cabin and it was like multiple days of playing board games nonstop. And that was the only time. It was like after a 4-hour game of at the end of a long weekend, I was like, okay, I think I'm full of board games. But no, I love working amongst it. I think that's what makes it so easy to go to work every day, is that I still like love board games. And I feel like board games as a hobby is always looking for the next thing. And so that's what kind of keeps it exciting and keeps it alive for me.
There's sort of a joke that goes around that some of the buyers or store owners tend to say, which is, when asked what your favorite game is, for me, it's the game that I've never played.
Mm. Well, I like that.
And that's sort of the life that we get to live, is I get to try every new thing, or I try to get to every new thing that comes out. And so it's just constantly something different, and I love it.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually one of the questions that we were thinking of is, when you are buying games, like, you have a vast inventory, do you play everything that you offer? Like, do the employees of Guardian play everything, or how does that even work?
Yeah, because when we were there earlier, like, we were just looking at games and you were coming up and talking to us and you knew everything about every game we had pointed. You'd be like, what about this one, this one, this one? I was like, yeah, how do you, it's like, when a game comes in, are you made to play it, or are you just like, do you get to play it before you buy it, or is that just...
No, unfortunately, I don't get to play every game. I wish I could, but there are just too many. It is a fire hose of games, and we are... I definitely research and look up everything about these games before they come in. So I have an idea of what they might play like, or sometimes I'll watch videos of play of them. So I have an idea, but I play a good amount of the games, but it would be physically impossible, I think, to play all of the releases in a given year.
It feels like somewhere after about 500 unique titles played, maybe around 1,000 unique titles played, you almost can play a game without actually going through the motions. Mm. That's not entirely true, but there are so many commonalities if you look at design or publisher or like mechanisms that are contained within the game, that even if you don't play it, you can know pretty confidently how it will play.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of something we talked about in an early episode about like hurdles to getting into the hobby, where it's just like, the more you play games, the more you understand how things work, and the easier it is for you to play other games. Because, oh yeah, I recognize all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So do you have any favorite games or games you think everyone should try? Sam, I know you mentioned you have your own podcast based on a single game. I don't want to imply that that's your favorite game, but it seems like it's got to be up there.
Well, yeah, I'm married to it, I feel like. I don't have a podcast about any other game. I mean, that game is Root. But it is probably not a game I'd suggest that everyone needs to play. It's pretty niche and a little difficult to get into. But I think if you're a hobby board gamer and you play a lot of games, then yeah, I do think you probably owe it to yourself to try it out. It's a game of asymmetric factions fighting over a map, but each one of the factions is like a different woodland critter. Like, there's like the birds and the mice and stuff like that. So it's very whimsical, and I see a lot of families pick up the box because the art is so charming, and I have to be like, hold on, this is essentially a counterinsurgency war game. but I do think it gets a lot of people to play a counterinsurgency war game that might not have otherwise played it.
And real quick, what's the name of your podcast, in case anyone wants to know?
Oh, yeah, it's called Woodland War Machine.
That's a fantastic name.
Thank you.
I love it. How about you, Ben?
It's tough. You know, we're asked a lot. My favorite sort of rotate on any given month. But the one that I always go back to is a game called Ra by Reiner Knizia from the late 90s, I think. Probably over 25 years old now. It's an auction game that tends to be my favorite sort of mechanism in games, is trying to figure out the price of something while everybody else is doing the same. Ra is tremendous.
I don't think we've played that mechanism yet, have you? You haven't made me play one of those mechanisms?
An auction mechanism?
Yeah.
No, I don't think so. Ra is great. I really like the estates for auction, just Ooh. Because I like being mean.
Yeah, the estates is yeah. It's excellent.
Ben, what does a general manager of a board game store do?
Yeah. So we have three stores. We've got Guardian Games in Aloha, Guardian Games in Corvallis, and Guardian Games Portland. And I've got a fantastic team of buyers. We actually have categorical buyers. We have more than just board games. You know, we have card games, we have puzzles, we have lifestyle items like stickers and pins, and then we've got the whole world of miniatures games. So I've got buyers for each of those categories. I sort of mentor them. I answer sort of high-end questions. I work on sort of curation of all the stores. When you walk into a Guardian Games, I want it to be the same at every location. I want to have that feel, sort of establishing a culture for the stores in terms of like hiring practices, events, the whole big picture stuff. And then some sort of unexciting back-end profit and loss sheets, looking at what makes the business actually run so that we can continue to do what we do and grow into new spaces as well, look at other locations.
So do you have to have like experience in all like the different miniatures gamings, or do you like get a lot of input into that?
It helps. So I try to study every separate category. My biggest weakness is I'm not really an RPG person. Luckily, Sam overlaps there a little bit, but our buyer Tilly is fantastic with that. So I do need some input, but I try to have my hand in everything to have an understanding of what the community wants, what the game is doing. It's a lot of research on my time, keeping up on trends and new designs and new releases all across the board. CCGs especially, they don't stop. Collectible card games, there's a new one, it feels like, every 8 weeks that we have to decide, okay, is this something that we're going to bring in?
And just in case anyone's curious out there, do you need a board game podcast show to be hired at Guardian Games?
No. There are several people that work at Guardian Games that don't produce content of any kind, though I'm not the only one who does produce content. We have Alex Hart is a YouTuber and TikToker that does Might I Suggest a Game, and he runs our board game event every Sunday. And even just on Black Friday recently, I noticed like all the customers recognizing him from the event and from his content and stuff. So it is a special crew we have over there.
Passion is the real thing that we're looking for, because we have a demo wall of 500 games that any employee can take home, you know, read the rules. So you can get familiar. If you love games, you'll get there. You don't need to come in having this encyclopedic knowledge. We have the tools for that. You just have to be excited.
I like that.
Fantastic. So we're going to do a quick reset here. So you're listening to KBOO Portland. If you're just tuning in, I'm Nate here with James, and this is Winner's Bias. Like I mentioned at the top of the show, we're in the midst of our Catalog of Connections end-of-year drive. We're trying to hit our on-air goal of $75,000 by the end of the year. Would love your help in doing so. Just as an example of the connections that can make, in an early episode of Winner's Bias, we are interviewing, from a competitor, I guess, so I know it's a friendly competition, Alex and Ty from CloudCap, and they reported to me a day later that a customer came in who had never played any modern board games and showed up at their shop saying, "Hey, I just heard about you on KBOO, and I thought I'd stop in and see what's going on," which made me feel good because that meant at least someone was listening, and that someone acted on like hearing about stuff. So that's great. If you would like to donate, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. You can even mail us a check at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. And speaking of catalogs, we're talking with Sam and Ben from Guardian Games, a store with so many games their catalog would be roughly the size of one of those U-line tomes. All right. So back to things. James, do you have a...
Yeah, back to Sam. With the, because you're the board game buyer, how do you decide on what games to stock?
Yeah, I mean, luckily I feel very fortunate to be at a store that's so large that it's, the expectation is that we have everything, right? So obviously I don't carry every single board game that I could possibly purchase, but anyone that I hear any kind of buzz about, I'm going to bring in at least two copies. I also feel very lucky that there is a website called BoardGameGeek.com that is almost an all-in-one place on the internet for board games. It, you know, it has reviews, it has what people are talking about. They have a rank of how hot a game is based on the buzz and people talking about it. I don't know a lot of hobbies that have such a centralized point where if like, oh, if it's number one on the hotness on Board Game Geek, that's going to actually directly result in people coming into the store asking for that game. And I, my wife knows that I often just fall asleep to board game YouTube. I live and breathe it. So my job is to have my finger on the pulse, and so I use all resources at my disposal.
Like, have you ever taken a risk on a game that might have not been so high on the list, and it turned out to do actually really well?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. I think that I'm very risk averse, so I'm scared of getting too many things in. If I've made errors, I feel like it's like, oh, I should have gotten more copies of that game. But yeah, of course. I mean, when you're bringing in hundreds of new titles every year, there's going to be some misses.
So this is sort of like a multi-part thing, related. So there's a thing called like the shut up and sit down effect.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Where if they recommend a game, it sells out everywhere immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And I know when I was getting into the hobby, the whole concept of like a game people like just not being available was sort of like mind-blowing. What do you mean I can't get this game? Everyone loves it. Why isn't it available? And it's the holiday season now, and channels like Shut Up and Sit Down just released a whole holiday recommendation thing. So do you have a struggle, especially around this time of year, with keeping things on the shelf or managing customer expectations of what you have?
A little bit. I first of all, the Shut Up and Sit Down effect, very real. I have alerts set on my computer and on my phone to remind me as soon as they post a video, because I have hours, not days, to get those games into the store. But yeah, I think it's weird how board game print runs work, right? They're also very not, they're very risk averse as well, right? They don't want to overprint a game. So they print, what, Ben, 10,000 copies of a game?
Yeah, that's a pretty standard print run.
Initial print run. And then somebody makes a video, it sells out immediately. Now they have to reprint the game, so that's going to take months. And that window of time is what we're talking about when things are out of print. Basically, if a game is good, it will always kind of come back in print eventually, unless there's some weird rights issues. But yeah, it's usually just a matter of time.
And I guess speaking of like the holiday season, I'm sure you get lots of new customers into the store. Like, how do you direct them, especially like if they're buying gifts for other people? Like, what's your approach in like new people coming into the store?
There's sort of a figurative spreadsheet. So when somebody comes, or flowchart, I should say. So when somebody comes in and they're looking for a particular thing, if we have that particular thing, easy. If we don't, we go through that sort of adjacency flowchart where we say, oh, okay, what is it that you were looking for? What was it that you liked about this game? Was it that it was a cooperative game? If so, then we're going to move to the cooperative section. And we're going to ask questions like, how many people are you going to be playing with? What's the age? How long do you like to play a game for? And with those inputs, we can narrow it down to find something that fits hopefully what they're looking for. And we work on that. We have printed adjacency sheets. Sam brings it up every day during the holidays that people need to be thinking about, you know, what games are similar. Like when we talked about Raw with an auction mechanism, what other auction games are there that somebody might like if you liked this?
So I've been, about 8 years ago, I went to Guardian Games for the first time, and it was when I was not into board games. I didn't know board games were what they were now. I was like, party games. So we went in, me and my wife went in to look for party games, and it was, we went in and it was scary. We saw all these games, we were like, we don't know what this is. We was not expecting this. And I was like, how do you design, or like, how do you design and make a store so it's not like that, so it's easy for new people to come in, and it's not just like huge board games everywhere, and it's like scary. It's like, how do you like ease?
So one of the things that's changed is that Guardian Games has sold to new ownership from the time that you were last in there. Angel and Michelle sort of started it. They did a tremendous job, and then the current ownership has taken over. And we really wanted to focus on eliminating some of the museum-like clutter. While it's impressive and incredible to see, the shopping experience was sort of diminished because of it. So we took down a lot of that volume. We sort of really started focusing more on the customer experience, not a hobbyist experience, but somebody who's, maybe their partner plays board games and they're looking for a gift. That's somebody who wants to feel welcome in our space. And so through training the staff, making it sort of more visually appealing, a little less cluttered, I think we've become a much more shoppable location.
Talking about a welcoming space, you talked about the wall of games people can play. What sort of like community events? What are people coming to Guardian to do outside of just buying games?
Yeah, I mean, we have events every night of the week. You can check our website for that, ggportland.com. A lot of the events are going to be those like organized play for the card games, right? Magic. We've got a couple new Bandai games, Union Arena, One Piece that are firing every week at our store. But also, as I mentioned, for the board game side of things, we have Alex Hart's Might I Suggest a Board Game event every Sunday that's there. Any other events that I'm missing, Ben?
We're always trying to do something. Yeah. We have an adventures sort of a D&D meetup on Tuesdays. Mm-hmm. We've got a Warhammer casual league that happens on Wednesdays that you can get tickets for. Or our play space is open during the day. You can come in and just take a game off the shelf. Check it out.
Totally free.
Yeah, that's awesome. I remember Alex and Ty from CloudCap mentioned like their space, their ideal world is that you come there, go there to meet friends, to go play together other places, just to like always have space for new people to come in, mm-hmm. Which I thought was like a real interesting perspective on like, oh, you don't just want people just there all the time. But
we love that, right? I love seeing our regulars, but for me, there's nothing better than seeing three regulars get together and then start their own like board game mm-hmm. journey at their own house.
Yeah.
And then we'll still see them. They'll still come back and say hi. But that's sort of the natural life cycle that we like to see.
Yeah.
And the more people in the hobby, the better.
Yeah. And luckily we're a space that's large enough where we can have both. You know, if you are the group that always meets at Guardian Games, we still got you. And there's still plenty of tables for new players as well.
Great. Yeah. So you talked about your favorite games of all time. We're coming to the end of 2024, and I wanted to ask, what has been your favorite game, your new favorite game of 2024, as in like a new game that just came out or the first time you've played it that it was this year?
Mm. My top two for 2024, definitely. Number one is Arx, which is the new game by Leader Games and Cole Worley, who made Root. So I'm a broken record here. It's fantastic. It's been selling incredible. Talk about the shut up and sit down effect. And then my number two is a card game that I just feel like isn't getting enough love, and that's called Pray Another Day. It's almost like a game like Skull, if you've played that, or Coup, where you're kind of trying to double think your opponents, but it's got this incredibly charming highlighter colored art on it, and it's got like a food chain kind of theme. I would definitely check that out if you haven't heard of that one. Ben?
Yeah, for me, I've got I'll do two choices. One for a more seasoned gamer, somebody who's been playing for a little longer. Endeavor Deep Sea is one that I've really enjoyed. It's a lot of different scenarios that you can go through, all ocean-focused, and it can be played competitively or cooperatively. I think there's even a solo mode. Endeavor Deep Sea is fantastic. And then for somebody getting into games, somebody who maybe hasn't tried a lot, I actually think one of the better gateway games, we call them sort of like entry point gateway games, came out this year. It's called Harmonies. It's a little game where you're making different biomes by selecting different terrain types. So you can stack up trees, you can create mountain ranges, you can do rivers, all to get creatures to inhabit your little personal biome. And the thing that's great about it, because you actually make the little terrain itself, even if you don't win the game, you've still made a satisfying little little place for your animals to live, and you can enjoy just that experience. So Harmonies is definitely one of my favorites.
It's like the Agricola thing, where it's like, well, I didn't win, but look at my farm.
Look at all these donkeys. Yeah.
Well, that's about all the time we have for today, because we got a little last spiel here for our end of year drive. But thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate you coming down, Sam and Ben. And thank you for... I don't know if you want to say goodbye. I don't want to cut you off.
Yeah, well, thanks so much for having us. And keep doing the board game live radio show. You're really fighting the fight.
We try.
Holding on.
It's been a pleasure. Come down and see us at 345 Southeast Taylor Street.
Yeah, great. And thank you for listening to Winner's Bias. If you would like to comment on the show, have any questions, or suggest discussion topics, you can email us at winnersbias@kboo.org. I'm Nate.
And I'm James. One last time, we're reminding you to please donate to our catalogue of Connections End of Year Fund Drive. If you enjoyed the program today or other KBOO shows throughout the year, please consider showing your support by making a donation and helping us reach our $75,000 goal. Just go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. And remember, it's not about the games you play, but taking a risk on that one game that turns out to be your favorite. Have a good one.
Keep our minds on the game.
All the games.
Games people play now.
Do you think that we could play another game?
Game.
Fun and game.
Game.
You play the game like nobody else.
The game is so fun.
Game.